Good morning. Get myself organized. As some of you know, I've been taking ministerial classes through Unity. And back in 2010, Mark Hicks, who is a Unity minister and also the webmaster of our truthunity.net website, anybody been on that yet? It is a wealth of wonderful information about Unity. Found a shrink-wrapped packet of 200 pages of instructor notes on a metaphysical Bible interpretation class tucked away under the counter in the bookstore at Unity Village. These notes were very likely written sometime in the late 1970s or 1980s by a Unity student named Ed Rabel. And the notes he found probably served as course materials for ministerial students. They're organized in lessons. The Old Testament, which is comprised of 15 lessons, the Gospels, which are another 15 lessons, and the Book of Revelation, which is 12 lessons. If this piques your curiosity, we have a link to truthunity.net on our church website, so pretty easy to find. And the lesson today comes from lesson 14 of the Gospels. In just 2 weeks, it'll be Easter, just like Linda was saying a minute ago. In just 1 week, we'll be observing Palm Sunday, that day when Jesus rode into Jerusalem to complete his purpose on earth. We all know the events of Passion Week and their culmination in the crucifixion of our wayshower, Jesus Christ. Perhaps our embedded theology has left us with feelings of guilt and remorse about this event. These feelings may tend to overshadow the joy and transformation message in Easter. In Unity, we don't see the crucifixion of Jesus as a tragedy, but as a step toward a great victory. And Jesus assured us that the same victory illustrated in his story can be attained by us. Scattered throughout all four Gospels are seven statements Jesus gave us during his crucifixion. We should consider each of these statements made by Jesus as a continuation of his teachings, and like all of his teachings, especially appropriate for us today. For those with eyes to see, they contain a significant spiritual meaning. The crucifixion symbolizes a process of eliminating the things which we no longer need for our continued spiritual unfoldment. This is the stuff that has fulfilled its purpose in us, so we either need to let go of it completely or lift it to a higher level of expression in our consciousness. Much like spring cleaning our house, we pull everything out, sort through it to determine what is valued, throw away the junk, clean up what we're keeping, and only then put back that which we value as worth keeping. The seven statements by Jesus from the cross verbalize seven great realizations of truth, which we can use to determine what to let go of and what needs to be lifted to a higher level of expression in consciousness, what is worthy of hanging on to. So, statement one is from Luke chapter 23, verse 34. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Inner forgiveness is the mightiest of spiritual acts. Without this, real spiritual progress cannot be achieved. Jesus made this the first of his seven statements because of its primary importance. To illustrate this, the story is told about a Filipino woman named Josephine, who claimed to have daily conversations with Jesus. A cynical priest heard about Josephine and sought to debunk her. He went to her and asked, "Is it true that you talk to Jesus every day?" "Yes, I do," she answered. "Then the next time you talk to Jesus, would you ask him what sin I committed when I was in the seminary?" the priest asked smugly. Then he walked away proudly, certain he had cornered the charlatan and would soon expose her. A week later, the priest returned to Josephine and asked her, "Did you ask Jesus what my sin was?" "Yes, I did," she answered. "And what did he say?" asked the priest. "He said, I forgot." To God, there is nothing to forgive. If God is love, love is always love. Forgiveness becomes necessary where there are feelings of anger, resentment, or hatred. Our lack of forgiveness makes it impossible for us to feel the love of God that is perpetually showered upon us. God does not withhold love. We build a barrier that God honors. Spirit is true to its loving nature. We are not always true to ours. For they know not what they do. If people really knew that they were what they were doing when doing something wrong, they simply wouldn't do it. Behind all offenses is a lack of understanding. Even a person who thinks they know what they're doing when they harm another really doesn't. We do well to remember Don Miguel Ruiz's four agreements, specifically agreement 2, don't take anything personally. Nothing others do is because of you. Statement 2 is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 23, verse 43. Today, you will be with me in paradise. Jesus spoke these words to one of the thieves being crucified with him. Charles Fillmore wrote that these two thieves symbolize the past and the future. Memories of the past can rob us. Anxiety about the future can rob us too. But spiritual awareness, Jesus, never robs us, but gives us strength and protection. The thief to whom Jesus spoke these words represents the future. What does spiritual awareness in us say about our future? Does it tell us to fear it? Does it urge us to protect ourselves from it? No. Spiritual awareness says to our future, today you will be with me in paradise. In other words, spiritual awareness says we can bring our concern for our future into the here and now consciousness of oneness with God. We can bring all thoughts about the future into paradise, which is our oneness with God. And it is here, it is now, it is forever. Statement 3 from the Gospel of John, chapter 19, verses 26 and 27. Woman, behold your son, and to the disciple, behold your mother. These words were spoken to Mary and, according to tradition, to the disciple John. Literally, Mary and John weren't mother and son, but Jesus was speaking from a level of the highest understanding about the truth of human relationships. And one of the greatest realizations we can have is the realization of our true relationship to every other human being in the human family. Whatever biological ties may exist, the spiritual ties can be stronger and even more important. In spirit, we are each other's mother, father, brother, and sister. To realize and accept this, will guarantee big steps for us forward in spiritual unfoldment. Statement 4 from Mark chapter 15, verse 34. My God, why have you forsaken me? Notice this statement is a question. I like the way Reverend Ed Townley, in his Interpret This Bible Interpretation series, explains this verse. Jesus was actually quoting the first line of Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from helping me, from the words of my groaning? Jesus knew Hebrew scripture well. This psalm expresses a sense of abandonment that may well have occurred to him during the course of his painful crucifixion. Jesus was probably not asking this question for his own sake, because he knew the truth that was the real answer. He asked this question to show us what is often in our own hearts as we seek to follow him. This question expresses the wondering in us as to why we are feeling separated from God, even when we know better. The feeling may creep over us before we're even fully aware of it. We wonder why, once again, God has forsaken us. This isn't very abnormal. It happens to the best of us. We all tend to feel abandoned when our spiritual commitment seems to be producing nothing but pain and suffering. But it's one thing to recognize those fears. It's quite another to surrender to the fear. The psalm goes on to affirm God's constant presence. He did not hide his face from me, but heard when I cried to him. And Jesus, too, acknowledges the fear, but moves through it, surrendering to the certainty that he is, as we are, always one with the presence and power of God. Statement 5, I thirst, from the Gospel of John, chapter 19, verse 28. This statement is an affirmation of a need. It is really an asking, and it was immediately followed by the meeting of that need. Jesus was given a sponge soaked with a mixture of vinegar and gall, or myrrh. It was a soothing drink. Jesus taught us, ask and you will receive. Here he gives us a poignant example of practicing what he preached. There are times when we find ourselves in a situation where things appear to be hopeless. During these times, we feel ourselves thirsting for righteousness. What should we do? Jesus said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. With God, no situation is hopeless, for God is mightier than circumstances. Jesus is the perfect example. He affirms or asks, I thirst, and he receives his drink. Statement 6, it is finished. The Gospel of John, chapter 19, verse 30. Everything that happens in a person's life is part of a cycle of learning, growing, and unfolding. Each event, each experience, each relationship, each victory, each defeat, all are a part of a great pattern of personal evolution. One of the most difficult lessons many people have to learn is to recognize when something has fulfilled its purpose or role in our life, and it's now time to let it go. Some people never seem to learn to recognize that some things are finished. This includes other people, possessions, jobs, pleasures, etc. But it especially pertains to our personal experiences in our own learning process in life. If we have to go through certain difficult or painful experiences, we should try to learn the lesson as quickly as possible. And once we feel we've learned the lesson, then it's wise to say, as Jesus said, "It is finished." Hold no grudges. Nurse no hurt feelings. Carry no unhappy memories. If it is finished, let it go. It has done its work. Greater good is now in store. The final or seventh statement is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 23, verse 46. "Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit." In the beginning, there was God. In every ending, there is God. God is our all in all. Jesus completed the cycle in which he accomplished exactly what he had come here to do. He brought that cycle to a climax in the symbolism of the drama of the crucifixion. The words he chose to verbalize that climax are in the statement which is the culmination. "Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit." People often wonder, what is going to happen to me next? If we will follow the example of Jesus, we can know that we can safely place ourselves, our lives, our bodies, our future in God's hands. We're not taking any risks when we do this. God is completely dependable because God cannot be changed. When Jesus gives us his example of commending his whole spirit into God's hands, he is once again demonstrating his own teachings. God is the answer to everything. God is the meaning behind everything. God is the only fate in store for his children. And God is absolute good. In closing today, as we experience the final weeks of Lent leading up to Easter, let's reflect on the seven statements by Jesus from the cross. Use these statements to do some spring cleaning. Determine what to let go of and what needs to be lifted to a higher level of expression in consciousness. Figure out what is worthy of hanging on to get your spiritual house in order and realize God is the answer to everything. In doing so, you can also realize Jesus' assurance that you too can experience your own victory. You can express his mighty power and his grace. You will feel God's glory within you and as you.